Right. So just a little bit, I think you have know a little bit about me, but for Stuart, I was just a quick background on who I am. I don't know if it says that I'm a police officer in the brochure, does it? I don't think
I think
so.
so.
Does
oh,
it?
You didn't think so? I didn't think
I
so.
Don't know.
I don't think so. I think it just said Monica Stethers. I think that's why the people aren't, because if they knew that they had a cop here, people would be like, in
yeah,
jokes here,
it
okay?
Pretty intriguing.
Yeah, it's
a female
cop, so I don't, but hey, I gotta take blame for that.
I'd
too.
Like to see you sort of demonstrate some self-defense moves on him.
On him? Okay, well, you know what? I can get you down on that ground real quick. It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't say, does it? Just as Monica
said. Well, I don't have a glass.
No, it doesn't. I'm sure it doesn't. I didn't notice that.
Nope.
So I was wondering if you were
No, not at all. No, not at all. So I thought it would say that, you know, Patrol Sergeant Winnipeg Police,
sense.
Whatever, in parenting
yeah.
issues, that's what I thought, but that's cool. All right, so internet safety. Oh, yes, Patrol Sergeant Stethers. I'm a sergeant with the Winnipeg Police Service. I've been a police officer for, I would say, 25 years. Into my 25th year, I complete 25 in February. Throughout my career as a police officer, I've worked in several different areas of the service. I have, done the undercover detective. I've worked in the vice division. I've done some interesting stuff in undercover work. The only time if somebody ever asked me, have you ever been a prostitute? I could say yeah, because I had to do that type of undercover decoy. And it was quite an amazing, interesting experience. For people that actually use the services, I was quite shocked. There's actually a couple of police officers that, yeah, it was just kind of crazy.
Were they arrested?
Yeah, they're arrested. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, one was an RCMP officer, just got promoted, lost his promotion. It was not good. Yeah, not thinking that there was actually a black female officer in the job. They thought it was safe to come talk to me. It wasn't, so.
Wow.
Yeah, but some people are really good. They looked at my teeth and they said, you've got really nice teeth. You're caught. Because a lot of the girls that are on the street, they're on drugs, right? And their teeth, because of whatever type of drugs they're on, they're not, they're
so
malnourished
they
in that.
Took off
then. Oh yeah, they said, we don't believe you. You look too healthy.
Uh-huh.
This is like, yeah, it was very bizarre, so.
You gotta work on that next time.
What's that? I know, I thought I should have done something, and you know, I was just, it was just looking too healthy. But yeah, so I've had varying experiences. In my last stint, I was an accreditation manager for our service, because our service, and Edmonton and Winnipeg, we're the two largest agencies in Canada that's accredited by international body, which means that we can apply with international police standards for best police practice. So I was managing the service to ensure that I was policing the police actually. And now my current role is, I'm the public information officer. And as I was telling Virgil, it was the irony of this all. And sometimes I say irony, but I think God just has a way of giving us our desires of our hearts. Because when I first graduated from high school, my plans were to go to, I think it's Polytech Institute at the time, or Ryerson Institute, to do journalism, because I wanted to do journalism. I wanted to be an anchor person, because I was watched RCTV Channel 5, and I thought it was the coolest job. And I wanted to be the first black female anchor person in Winnipeg, yes, on CTV TV. But of course, I've got a 26-year-old son, so at the age of, I was close to 19, I had my son, and that plans didn't work out. And of course, watching Charlie's Angels, I was intrigued by female police officers, detectives. I thought it was so cool. Not a lot of role models back in the 70s, right? So they were big role models. So I thought, you know, I'll just try my hand at policing, because I've always been interested. So I applied for the University of Manitoba, because I thought, well, the Ryerson didn't work out, so maybe I'll become a probation officer. It's close enough to law enforcement. And then I applied for there, and also for the police service. I got accepted into police service at the age of 20. And I thought, could be a poor student for 5 years, or go to be police officer, get to have a great career, and take care of my son. So that's what I did. So 25 years later, here I am with a 26-year-old. Another plan that I had was to actually have the police service pay for me to go through law school, because that's what I also want to become a lawyer, but I didn't have it. People say I could still do it, but no, it's too much work. So here I am. And I'm just so thankful that the conference, they've asked me to, you know, do the presentation just to speak about these issues of today, because a lot of our people, young people are facing, and even as adults, facing issues of internet safety. Of course, the internet is the source of knowledge and entertainment, and it's just the biggest thing to hit our century. It's an outstanding communication tool and stimulates learning and exploring. You think of when we used to go to university, we had to do projects and stuff. I think about going to the library and going through the encyclopedias, and it was just so tedious, but that's all we knew, right? And what's that?
Everybody
had the same information, right? And now, I was laughing at the group earlier because I said, can you imagine the kids going to the library that say, hey, let's just go have a retro experience. Let's go to the library, right? Just be so different to them. I just quickly go through this stuff. Oh, did I miss that? False. Darn. Okay, that was about just the cyberspace. Remember that any type of information that we put out there, it's out there forever. Do you use the internet? Do you use the internet? I have a couple of friends that don't have computers. It was just like, I'm like, I don't know how they survive. We have to be really careful of the information that we put out. I'm going to be jumping all over the place, so I'm not going to be following. They're so formal. But we talk about Facebook. It took me a very long time to get a Facebook account. I didn't want a Facebook account. And the reason why I ended up getting a Facebook account is because my family, they would have all these photos and they would tell me, go on Facebook, we have all the photos on Facebook, or go on Flickr, we create a Flickr account for you. So it comes to my next thing about passwords, choosing passwords. There's so many accounts that we all have, I'm sure, and we should always choose a really secure password. But I think for most workplaces, you have no choice. The system, I know for the police service, it prompts us to create secure passwords with numbers, and uppercase and lowercase. So like me, I have a password, the same password for everything. So if somebody was to get a hold of my password, they're gonna get into everything, even my bank account. And so if you choose to use a password, make sure that it's a complicated, complex password, but that's easy enough to remember. And if you're gonna use your kid's name, just make sure that the name is complex, because people that are trying to do identity theft or break into your computer, they're gonna go for the most obvious. They go for the date of birth, they go for your phone number, your children's names, maybe where if you have a hobby, there's ways that they could break in. So just ensure that your password is pretty secure. And of course, never reveal your passwords to anybody. You can tell the kids that they should never. I think that when you say never reveal your passwords to anybody, they just show an example of a complex password. They've got the numbers in the upper and lowercase. I think that when it comes to relationships, I believe in transparency and openness in a relationship between a husband and wife or a girlfriend boyfriend. And that's when I think that it's okay to have passwords. To let somebody, give somebody your password. I think that if you're in a relationship with somebody who, for whatever reason, if it's work-related and they can't, it's a breaching work regulations if you give out your password, then I could understand that. But just for internet accounts and stuff, I think that it just shows openness, trust, and transparency.
Is that like to just sign on to the internet?
Sign on to an account, say one of your networking accounts. Because signing on to the internet, you could have just one. Well, actually for Shaw, you could have multiple users on the email. Like for my son has his own password to get onto, just to open up his desktop, right? So I would keep that secure also, because you could have five people living in the same house, but everybody has their own desktop. So in my relationship, I have the passwords for my fiance, and he's got all my passwords because it's just open transparency. There's nothing to hide. But for kids with friends, I would not have their friends knowing the passwords to get onto your home computer. To be very careful about who you allow to use your computer. A computer is a private thing. When I leave my computer and I like here, I'm now here and I'm supposed to be working. I'm actually off this week, but when I get back, somebody might use my computer. I know if somebody's been using my keyboard. It's just very personal, right? So you just hold on to your passwords as it's hold it close to you, because it could give you, you could end up having grief if somebody gets hold of your passwords and start sending messages or doing illegal things on the internet with it. Do not choose anything that reveal information about you, as I said, that will attract unwanted attention. So that's appropriate usernames. I have a professional username and just a regular username. I've got Monty Cop, and it was a nickname that a comedian gave me. Your name is Monica, you're a cop, ha ha ha, Monty Cop, and that's how it stuck. So with my shot, it's Monocop, and I've got Gmail, it's also Monocop. But for anything that I'm going to be using for professional, it's mstethers. It could be mstethers at Shaw, mstethers at Gmail, whatever it is. So just appropriate. Because people also judge you by your, by the username. So it's really important that the kids will choose appropriate usernames. It comes to cyber predators. I'll speak about cyber predators comes to children, but also as adults, we've got to be careful with cyber predators, especially if we're single. And I'll tell just a little story about somebody, somebody that I know, a friend of mine that was, she was more or less stalked by a predator. It's through online dating. So predators considered one of the most dangerous threats online. Cyber predators are searching for vulnerable kids to exploit. They search for vulnerable kids, but for this presentation, I'm also going to talk about predators that go after adults. The children that are being targeted are approximately 14 years of age, and approximately 60% of them are usually females. And why? Well, females, you know, we're a little bit more emotional. They get to the heart of the females. They would compliments, you're so sweet, you know, they'll talk about the parents, like if there's lots, so many homes that they're, the how people have gone through separation splits, whatever, about 50% of marriages are breaking down. It's even reflective in the church. So you've got kids that are vulnerable, that are in situations, especially if they're going back and forth with their mom and dad, like that's the going thing these days. Kids are going to become vulnerable, and it appears that females are a little bit more seeking that attention. 70% of the incidents occur while at home, because a lot of the kids now, they've got their own iPads, laptops, iPhones, smartphones. They could text from anywhere, go on the internet from anywhere. So when they're in their privacy, they're not going to tell their parents. Most of them don't. They hide it from their parents. If somebody's sending them explicit, inappropriate messages, they might be kind of concerned or afraid to tell their parents because afraid of getting in trouble. Oh, it could be on the phone, the smartphone, anything that they have access to the internet, they could be targeted because they could get on any type of social networking sites on those computers. So it's become a little bit more difficult for parents now to really have a handle of what's going on with their kids, because they could use these anywhere, right? They don't have to be at home on the desktop computer anymore. And 60% of the incidents involve chat rooms. That's where a lot of these predators, they go to these chat rooms. And they go to chat rooms where, of course, they know that a lot of teenagers or young people will be in. And they'll strike up conversations with the youths. And they, some of the predators, they know they have their usernames, their online cyber names, and they will actually correspond with each other. Oh, you're talking to a so-and-so, I was talking to so-and-so, and they'll share information. It's kind of a sick group, and we have this, it's called ICE Unit. Yes? Mm-hmm. You?
Finish your thought now.
The Integrated Child Exploitation Unit, and ICE Unit, it's a task force with Winnipeg Police Service, RCMP, but the task force also, it extends throughout the world, and I know that we've made connections with people, with predators, even in Australia. And there are thousands online. And the police really, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Tens of thousands of predators, pedophiles. And they've got their little club going. They talk to each other, and they know. So if they're in a chat room and one predator sees that another is talking to somebody, a young person, they'll know, oh, so-and-so is online, like they know. So it's pretty scary. And a lot of kids, they don't know that, because the internet is safe, because they think, they feel that they're safe because they're sitting in their home or wherever, but it's such an amazing tool, but yet can be so dangerous, you know? 50% of victims told, only 50% of victims told anyone, and only 25% told their parents. So a lot of parents don't know what's happening. They're afraid to talk to their parents. They usually start online friendships with the child to gain their trust. Start asking them about school, family, and other personal information. So it's just a way, you know, strike up a friendship, just very innocent questions, and then they gain their trust. They get the kids to tell them things that maybe they shouldn't have. Get their child to talk about personal things like the relationship with their parents, and of course, you know, The predator usually wants to be their best friend. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Just as a thing to go with that, because it just sort of seems blank that way. When they're communicating with the child, they are giving the impression, and they're putting it on their website or whatever, that they're the same age as the child.
Oh, yes, exactly. That's,
and that's why this happens so easily, because the child thinks they're talking to another child.
Right, they don't know. They don't know that. So the predators, they could, it's usually, they could be 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, but the child feels that they are talking to somebody else their age, and that's because most young people, if they knew that they're talking to somebody that was as old as their father, right, they wouldn't continue the conversation, but you're right, most of them, they think that they are, so that's why they share all this information.
Do you remember the case, I forget how many years ago it was, 7 years ago, where they busted that guy in Edmonton? He was like the top predator in the world, and he had internet porn and child porn,
mm-hmm.
and it was like in Iran,
all over,
but, yeah.
Yeah, from people.
And he was turned in by a 12-year-old boy. There was a boy, I was living in BC at the time, and he lived there. His name was Bulldog.
Bulldog. I can barely remember. That was his username.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he would pretend, well, I mean, he was a kid. He started when he was 8 years old and did it for 4 years and was always turning into pedophiles.
Oh, this kid?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And the police found out that this was a kid and they were trying to find him because they were afraid that he was going to get hurt.
Right.
Because the pedophiles were angry at him.
Right, yeah.
And he was getting out. Busted the kid on it. They finally found the kid through this whole thing. But he turned in, I think it was 123 pedophiles before they stopped the kid in comparison to what the police officers were getting up, because he thought like a kid. He was a kid, he thought like a kid, and he knew what the pedophiles were looking for.
And he just kind of targeted at the predators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went after the predators.
Well,
the one in Edmonton, like, I forget the numbers they had. Like, this guy was sick. Like, he was bringing children into his home and taking pictures and sodomizing them and all, right, and putting it on the internet and sending it to all these other ones. And he would get these kids. Like, he was flying kids in from BC and Saskatchewan. Like, it was horrendous, the traffic ring he had.
It's it gets pretty seedy and pretty sick, the stuff that they will do. It's the kids, and that's why in the presentation I talk about, if you just met somebody online, you do not meet them in person. But some of these kids, they do, for whatever reasons, they'll run away. There's a video on here about a little girl that ran away, but thank the Lord that nothing, she wasn't injured or anything. And I'm going to talk about the threats. And there's the serial killer that we arrested 3 weeks ago in Winnipeg, and then just about all the murdered and missing women in Manitoba, how I'm going to, I'll link it into what people think of at risk. You know, but being on the internet, kids are at risk, and so are adults, right? So I'll just talk a little bit about that. Okay, so they'll start talking about things like kissing them, getting in more serious sex talk. I'm just gonna like quickly just skim through this, so if you have any questions, just tell me. May try to get them to do sexual stuff, which usually they do, take off your shirt, you know. Can I see your bra? Are you wearing a bra? Or can I see what color underwear you're wearing? And then they just start with stuff like that until the kids will strip down naked. And then once they have, the kids are trapped. They feel that they don't want to tell anybody because they've just done something really bad, because they've just confided, they've gained trust, you know, and now what do I do? And then they take all the snapshots. They have the photos. They'll even show them, huh, you can't tell your parents because look what I have. And they show them the photos, because you could take photos while they're on the webcam, right? So sometimes offer them money or gifts for sexy pictures. You know, so there's still the days of, here, little boy, little girl, do you want candy? But now they're saying, hey, I'll give you some money or give you gifts or give you a new iPhone, whatever, if you send me some naked nudies of you shots. It's a sick world. And, you know, there's people that just prey on people. They'll try to meet, may even offer to pay for their bus fare, air tickets. They do like that. Sure, that happened in Edmonton. Call them pet names to make them feel good. And that's why you think 60% of the females get caught in this, you know, thing. prevent them from telling their parents about the cyber friendships, tell them that they love them, threaten them by telling them that they will hurt them or family members. Something happened to my computer. Something happened to this when it was, you know what, I should have rebooted. What's going on here? No. Hang on for a second, bear with me for a second. Where was I? Cyber predators, did I just show that? No. Okay, I'm gonna have to go back to this, sorry. I left it sleeping, so I don't know what's going on with this. So, I remember what. Okay, here's the one. Let's see. It was working earlier. I should have rebooted it. I didn't. So, I'll just continue on. I'll try to, maybe we'll show the videos after if we have time. Because the videos are really powerful. Only visit age-appropriate chat rooms. But even when they're in age-appropriate chat rooms, they visit them, but the predator is there. They go to the age-appropriate chat rooms, and that's how they target them. What's that?
Go to a chat room.
But then, you know, there's so many chat rooms, though. Like, the kids, it could be a chat room about a game, you know, about an animation or something.
They have chat rooms for the school.
They have chat rooms for everything, right? So the kids, it's just a part. We have to learn how to live with the internet because we can't be afraid of it because the kids are going to go to these chat rooms, so it's just about being safe. We live in this world with predators and bad people. So it would be really difficult to tell the kids not to go to chat rooms because there's so many, they're going to go to chat rooms. But it's how do you keep safe while you're in the chat rooms, right? Chat rooms for everything. We've got, there's a Bible, onlinebible.com. They got chat rooms there. You could speak to people throughout the entire world that's reading that same Bible, that chapter for the day. So there's chat rooms everywhere, good ones and bad ones. And even in those chat rooms, you got people that try to hook up. It's just the nature of humans, right? It's just the way that it is. Remember that they cannot, as anybody, remember that they can't trust anything that the person they're chatting with tells them. And never agree to meet anyone in person that they only met online. Okay, so that works for young people, but for adults, let's talk about people that are dating online. This is the way the world is. We can't get away from it anymore. A lot of single individuals out there. We look at even our church. We have our own dating websites and that. And I know that there's a fellow that I work with. He is not an Adventist. He does not go to church. I would say that he's a Christian. He's not a practicing Christian. He does believe in Jesus Christ, the Son of God. But he was on the Adventist website. Somebody says, do you know so-and-so? I said, yeah, he's not Adventist. He doesn't even go to church. So they're people that will go on these websites because they're looking for a good Christian girl. They're not Christians themselves, but they will make up all kinds of stories. So an individual that I know met somebody on a Christian website. And his profile was, and we talk about not meeting online, when you start dating, you're going to have to meet them eventually, right? So if you only met them online, you're going to meet them. So this goes for the kids. They should never meet anybody that they in person that they've met online. But she ended up meeting this fellow who professed to be a Christian. Talk the talk, walk the walk. And this person I know, she's been vegetarian since the age of 13. She was an Adventist. She didn't become vegetarian because she was just a vegetarian lifestyle. So it just kind of fit into the Adventist, our sets of beliefs. And so the fellow that she met, he said he was a Christian. And within 2 weeks of meeting her, he became an Adventist. So I, with my police sense and spidey senses, this seems really odd because it's a lifestyle decision. And I know that it's like, I guess, going vegetarian when you love a big juicy steak, it's like stop smoking cold turkey. I don't think it's that easy. So there are just a lot of things that was just going through my mind.
Baptism takes longer than 2 weeks at last, I heard.
What, vegetarian?
No, baptism. So he became an Adventist in
2 weeks. 2 weeks and a vegetarian. Yes, yeah, it was pretty fast. It was pretty good. So I didn't believe that. And so did some checks because he didn't sit well with me. And she met him. And of course, with my investigative background, did some checks, found out that he was wanted by the police in two or three different states in the U.S. And guess what he was wanted for? Date rape, women that he met on Christian websites. Mm-hmm. So predators, adult predators, after single, and it's not what vulnerable. Well, we all have some vulnerability to us, right? Especially comes to relational things. And I'm not saying that it's not a good thing for dating, because people do meet, they get married. But this, in this case, he was meeting these women and putting drugs in their tea, drugging them, and then taking advantage of them. And the person that I know, I'm so thankful, God was just looking out for her, because she has this rare condition that if she's put under, she can die. She doesn't come out, if her body does not metabolize the anesthetic, and she could go in a coma and die. So the doctors are usually right there, and they just know how many levels to give her and what to bring her back. And if he had did that to her, she would have died. You know, so he eventually, I found out that, find out the cases, who the detective was, contacted the detectives in the States. They said, yeah, we've been looking for this guy. He's wanted in three different states. And there's one outstanding, sent me the police reports, all the text messages and emails and stuff, and it was the same thing. So told him where he was, and of course they broke up. But you have to be very, very careful, because people say who they even on Christian dating website, you got to be very careful. People could be whoever they want to be and say they, but it's, you really got to just do some checks. Never agree to keep an online relationship a secret, even for, so the kids should know if they've got on, never keep it a secret from their parents. But even as friends or adults, never keep an online relationship a secret. You know, it goes for adults too, because you need wise counsel, you need friends just to bounce things off of. So, what's that?
I don't understand how
adults get sucked in. They do, every day. Every day, I read the police reports. I'm not even gonna go into details of stuff that happens. But it's unbelievable, but they do. Mm-hmm.
But even when I meet you, you tell me you're a police officer, I was like, okay, fine, I'll take it.
Yeah.
But I take it with a grain of salt.
You check, right?
I check. I have no way of checking, but I'll just, if you became a part of my social circle somehow, my wife and I, mm-hmm. then it would be, you'd kind of observe this person.
I know. It's, see, it's my nature. I check everything. I don't take.
But how do you check this?
You Google, there's a lot of information. How did I check it?
You can't do it when you checked out that guy. You couldn't have done it through the police.
I didn't do it through the police. I went online and you pay, because in the U.S., they'll give information on anything. It's amazing, the freedom of information. They don't have FIPPA, that Freedom of Information Protection Privacy Act. That has just totally stifled everything in Canada. They give out information. So I saw that he came up. He was arrested for a felony. And then I did more checks and found out what state he was from, what city, and got the name of the investigators. And yeah, called, spoke to the investigator myself. He goes, where is he now? I said, well, he's here in this state. He was on a Canadian-U.S. border town. Mm-hmm. Because he wanted to be close to my friend. It was not good. Yeah, so, but people do.
I think I'm more interested in that part. Because some of the boyfriends and girlfriends. My older kids.
It's
and then the younger ones.
Oh, it's just like, I say that it's just that people have to do their due diligence and check people out. It's unfortunate, unless you have gone to college with them, you've grown up with them, see them in school and church, know their family, okay, you can be pretty secure that you know the person. If you're meeting them and they're not in your social, your circle, and they live someplace else, you have to do your due diligence. The fellow that I'm engaged to, I met him at a law enforcement conference. Okay, we're all law enforcement. I didn't care, you know. So he did this. Okay, I went online. I checked things out. He said, you're a cop, I know, you're here to law enforcement. Yes, you've got the security of U.S. government and that, doesn't matter. I checked them out. My sister laughs at me. She says that, all my friends, they know. But they said, it's just your nature. It's a policing in you, it's that instinct. But I just think that we should. I check out my friends' boyfriends. I just do. I want them to be safe. I'm not a distressing person, but you just have to, you can't be too careful these days, right? So. Well, I want to talk about the, okay, we'll talk about this, and I'm going to talk about the serial. This is going a little bit, I wouldn't normally, I talked about this morning, but if there's more people, it's just because it's a smaller group, but the serial killer that we found in, we arrested in Winnipeg, and I'm going to tie it into high-risk lifestyle and how people view what the girls got into, and for them to get themselves involved in a situation where they were became victims of homicide, but how internet luring and internet can also put you at a high risk of being vulnerable and becoming a target without leaving your house and doing drugs or being on the street. So it is an offense to lure anyone in Canada. I think the law was enacted about 6 or 7 years ago. Communicate electronically with a person believed to be a child for the purpose of facilitating the commission of sexual offenses. They had to enact this law because this was happening too often. Depending on the offense, their requisite age, real or believed, and that's the thing, real or believed of the intended victim varies from 14 to 18 years old. Oh, what's that? Well, that is the requisite, yeah, the real or believed, it's like that's what's between those ages, that's when the luring for 14 to 18, real or believed. So if you think that the person, I thought they were 20 years old, it doesn't matter, you know, it's still, you could be charged with luring, yeah. And then under that is just luring or just pedophilia. So when you talk about the risk of the predators, in just 3 weeks ago, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, we were arrested, the Winnipeg police arrested a serial killer. Even when I think about it today, I still see the girls' faces in my mind. Like, it's just so sad. Arrested a serial killer. These girls, and we have a task force, it's the Missing and Murdered Women Task Force, and now we've identified 84 women. It goes back, there's about 100 and something, but it goes back to, dates back to the earliest case of 1952, where women have gone missing, or they've been murdered. Out of the 178 cases or so of missing and murdered, there were criteria that these women had to fall into, and it was either they were involved in a high-risky lifestyle, drugs, prostitution, or just mental instability. So there were alcoholism, so different risk. And so out of those, we identified 84 women that fell within that criteria. And from there, and that did not involve domestic homicides or anything, or accidental drownings or anything. People go missing, they're missing, but it wasn't a homicide. We assume that they presumed drowned. So out of the 84, we identified 28 that really fit that criteria because they were living a high-risk lifestyle. And so what we're trying to figure out is those 28 cases, are there links? And there's a way that we've got this amazing data system that's linking. We've got now identified 27,000 pieces of information. And pieces of information could be an address, car license, names, phone numbers. Are there any linkages to those 28? And is there one perpetrator that's linked with more than one of these females? And that's what we're trying to figure out, to see, do we have a serial killer, or are all these 28 people killed by different people? So when we think about high-risk lifestyle, we think about people that live that life. But what about high-risk on the internet? Because young people that are lured, that see those same individuals out there, that's out there going after the prostitutes, looking for these people in high-risk lifestyle, they're sitting at home on their computers too. They can also be luring or engaging in conversation with somebody like me or one of your children, grandchildren, whoever, friends, children. So, and then those individuals could, as they do, they develop trust, they're manipulators, develop trust, just takes a young person, go meet that individual, now they become part of the statistics. It's hardcore reality, it's scary, but it's so for us to think that it's more unlikely that it would happen, but there's still that chance. So we have to stop thinking, like the people think that, okay, well, that will never happen, that could never happen to a friend of mine, their children, even me, because I don't live that lifestyle. But there are people that are out there that are capable of doing these horrendous crimes that are learned people on the internet. For example, like the person I just spoke about, that if my friend, if this happened, she could have died. So high risk, internet is an amazing tool, but also there's risk attached to it. And this is the only reason, this is why we go into schools and we tell the kids and we talk to the parents, be aware because this can happen, right? Okay, so social networking, they incorporate instant messages, chat rooms, profiles, emails, blogging in one site. Anyone on the internet can access these sites. And so that's why it's important that for us and our kids, they know that social networking, the information is out there. Anybody could access it. There was a recruit that these recruits, whenever we get new police recruits, they're so excited to be police officers, and they have this, I think it's a police website, and it's good for law enforcement officers. And then they go on, they chat back and forth, they do postings and stuff. And the police service right now, we're getting into social networking, Twitter, Facebook, because we just want to deliver information, send them. So you can see, we want to give our information out, but there are people who are giving their information out there freely, and people are taking that information and using it. It goes on, it comes down to identity theft. And so this one fella, he was organizing with a group of recruits. This is where we're going to meet. We're going to have this meeting after recruit class. We're going to go here. And he posted a photo of, I think it was his house. It was a photo. So one of the investigators, to show how dangerous this can be, especially, they're saying, listen, you're now becoming public figure. You're law enforcement. You've got to be very careful because there are people out there. This on Saturday, we had somebody standing across the street in front of our main police station dressed in a big, it was 35 degrees out, in a huge beaver mascot outfit with a badge number saying the police lies, identified the badge number. And so there are people out there that they would want to hurt us. So the officers, what the officer did was that whenever we post photos online, we must know that information is loaded in that photo. And anyone that has the knowledge, they could pull that information out to find out where it was taken, when it was taken. All GPS is all loaded in. The date, time, resolution, what they used. So the officer went in, pulled that photo, pulled all the picture off of it, found out where that individual lived. He knew what time, because he says, let's meet at this place at this time. Knew what time they were going to be there. He got the information, found out where it went to the officer's, the recruit's house, and went to their house and took photos of his house. Had children's tricycle in front yard, and this is all that information. Met them where they were going that evening and said, I was just at your house. I know that you have at least one child. This is your child's bicycle, and this is your house, and I know you were not home between these hours. Now, if somebody was really out to get that officer or to harm their family or what, have kidnapped their kids, they would have on them. The officer, the recruit was mortified, and it was just an example of how we have to be very cognizant. We can't operate, be scared of the internet because it's with us, but we have to be very, very careful. You know.
How do you block that sort of stuff?
You don't.
Facebook's
full of pictures. Yeah, how you block it? You don't. I didn't want to get a Facebook account, but my family, they were tagging. I never wanted to be, because being an officer, I never wanted to be on Facebook. I didn't want my photos out on Facebook. So whenever anybody took photos, I'd say, please do not put my picture on Facebook. And then I was tagged in some of the photos. And I was tagged with photos I didn't want on the, so a couple times I saw photos, I went to my friend's Facebook and said, I don't even like that photo of me. Can you please take it off? You did not get my permission to put my photo on. Don't put my photo on Facebook. So if I was here right now and I took photos of you, I would not load that on my Facebook saying, hey, I was at Foothill Camp on July 15th or 16th, and here's Brenda. I wouldn't do that. I need to get your permission. And I think that I'm on the premise that's how people should operate, and that's what we advise the kids. Do not load your friends' photos on Facebook unless you get pictures, because there are custody battles that are going on. There's so much information that is out there that people could pull from it. So Facebook owns your photos. So I stopped loading my photos on. I have photos on there. I stopped loading, but it doesn't stop people from tagging me in their photos. That's when somebody takes a photo of you, they load it on their Facebook, and they put your name on it. And then if you have a Facebook account, it'll come up. If you have your emails from Facebook coming to you, because Facebook will send me emails, and I get it on my BlackBerry. Oh, there's a new message. Somebody sent you a message, or you've been tagged. So once you're tagged, your name's identified. Somebody will just kind of scroll over your photo, and your name will pop up. And then now what I can do is go on Google, Google your name and it's going to come up to that Facebook page. And if that person doesn't have their restrictions tight enough, your photo will pop up. And my Facebook, you could look at the kids' Facebooks, or, you know, if you guys have younger children, but my Facebook, I've set the settings so restricted that you can't find me on Facebook. If you run my name or you go on Facebook, you cannot invite me to be a friend, because I didn't want a bunch of people inviting me to be friends. I operate on the premises, if I'm not going to have you in my house to sit down and show you my photo album, I'm not going to invite the whole world to look at my photo, right? So Facebook is an amazing tool for organizations, church organizations, police organizations, Club Scout, whatever, great. But for personal information, I think that we've gotten so relaxed with how we deal with information. We just give information away. I think we just have to like pull back a little bit more and be a little bit more careful. There's a photo that I have, a photo out there that I was mortified when I saw it. I was at work one day and I was Googling, because sometimes I Google my name. Google your name, because you'd be amazed how many things come up on your name. A photo of me came up. It was 2010. In Hawaii, when I was in Hawaii. My girlfriend and I were taking photos of us in our bikinis, right? We're thinking, we're 45, take photos. We look at it when we're 85 and go, ooh, right? So that was the premise of it, right? We're on holidays. I Googled my name and one of the photos of me in my bikini came up. This is on the internet. I was mortified. How? Because I would even show when, and then on Facebook, when you put albums on Facebook, you can restrict your albums to who can see it. So with my Hawaii photos, I only had my girlfriends in a very small circle of my girlfriends that could see my photos. So any male friends that I had on my Facebook were not allowed to see my photo. And then there's my photo on the World Wide Web and me standing in a bikini on a rock in Hawaii. I've searched it again. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. And I think what happened is that we loaded photos on Flickr to share. And Flickr, you got to be so careful with these photo sharing websites, because if you don't click off not for public view, I think it publishes it. So anybody that goes on that, if you in Flickr run your name, the photo will come up. And I think that's what happens, what went on in the internet. So I don't think it's there. So do not Google my name. You'll find it. But so these are just all that. I'm not going to read through all the terms and conditions. It's just, they have, you will not provide any false personal information to Facebook to create an account for anyone other than yourself without permission. All those, it's to cover Facebook's, to cover them for litigation, because all this stuff you can create, if they deny you, you could go on, create another Facebook, use another email. It's hard to break into people's Facebook accounts now, but it says you will not use Facebook if you're under the age of 13. There, he got 10-year-olds on Facebook. So it's just a matter of, it's just for to cover them from litigation. You will keep your contact information accurate and up to date. I hardly ever go on Facebook, so it is not up to date. You will not share your password. And so it's just a liability thing for them too. Privacy profile. Make sure your privacy profile is set. And I think Facebook now has changed it that preferred. I only want friends only, but I think now that my friends that are on my Facebook, I think I've got about 40 friends that are on my Facebook, I think their friends could search me and send me friend requests. I didn't want anyone sending me a friend request. So now it's just a huge network. But it's a great thing, but you've got to be very careful. And just about the privacy settings, how you could set. I love this. It says, reminder is Facebook. He goes, you're doing the wrong thing. You see that? It's kind of funny. Never post personal information online. And that's hard. Who doesn't post personal information? It's kind of hard to be off the radar in this day and age. We're all on the radar. I mean, you're a conference president, right? You're on the radar. All of us are on the radar. You do sermons, whatever. We're there. So it's just about not posting too much information. We just arrested a fella a week and a half ago, and he has broken into so many systems, government systems, stolen ID, stolen identification. So theft identity is huge. And if somebody steals your identity, it is so hard to get your credit rating back up. It's very difficult. So information, you just have to be very, very careful. Basic information, yes, everybody could get your date of birth and that, but you got to keep it. You just have to try to keep the informational personal to you. Never tag yourself or others in any photos, and we talked about it. And my videos aren't working. We'll try to reboot it after with the videos. So remember, you can't take back any text or image once posted. Teens have lost scholarships and denied entry to schools and lost jobs because of harmful information found on their personal, because employers, potential employers are going on their Facebook accounts, so make sure the kids know. I've got a niece that she lives in Toronto, and she was on my face. She was a Facebook friend. I took her off as my Facebook friend. As a professional, I did not want my, you know, you can't choose your family, but you definitely could choose your Facebook friends. That's the rule. And I took her off my Facebook because the photos that she had posted was just, I did not want that attached to me at all. You know, so sometimes it's just a good idea if you have a Facebook account or if your friends have a Facebook, your kids have a Facebook account, go on and just try to clean it up because, like I said, scholarships, potential employers, just they go on and they look at Facebook. We do a lot of investigations from Facebook. We either organize crime, they're using Facebook as their tool. You know, gangs are using Facebook to recruit people. Police, we use Facebook to help us aid investigations. Oh, the information that you can find out. You got people posing with their tattoos, all that stuff. It's just like, we're looking for a male with a tattoo on his left bicep. We find it. Like, people just, they're not thinking. It is such an amazing investigative tool for us. But that's because people are just putting everything and anything on Facebook. We got some guys holding a shotgun. Oh, okay, you have a shotgun, that's illegal. We know who this guy is. He obviously has this gun, so we put out a bolo, be on the lookout for arming dangerous, because we know now that he's in possession of a firearm, you know, so it's pretty amazing what you could find out. Posting personal info about friends on their site can be, it can endanger their friends, you know, and them also. And as I went through this already, always ask for permission. I don't know how it works in church, because we have church websites with family photos and that on it, right? So I guess it's just a, how does it work?
Well, we're supposed
to ask permission. Yeah. I just think that's just the best way to go. And Twitter, does the church have a Twitter account? No? I opened a Twitter account when I went to GC in 2010, because GC was on Twitter. So they were saying, follow us on Twitter. And so I opened a Twitter to find out what's going on, because I want to find out all the activities. Twitter is, it's even worse than Facebook. The information, everybody, because it's so public, everybody can find out. You put, open an account, people will be following you. They've got followers. And a follower is somebody who will start looking at your website and they like what you're posting, so they'll follow your postings. So I put on, they were having a charity golf tournament at one of the events at GC. So I just, where is a golf tournament happening? And then all of a sudden, people are following me with golf information. You know, there's this great golf deal. You buy golf clubs here, wherever. So I haven't canceled my account yet, because if you Google me, I'm on Twitter. I don't even really fully understand how it works, but it's a lot of, when I do a news briefing for the media, as soon as I start reading my news release, they're Twittering. And that information is gone. It's quick information. So it's a great, great tool if you want to get information out there ASAP. So it's a free website that uses up to 140 character messages. It's the profile information is public. And so if your kids or anyone, you know that even if you're Twittering, you got to remember that if you're tweeting, you could be being charged for text messages. So Twittering becomes, it's addictive. It could become a very expensive habit. Safe texting, don't text any promises you aren't willing to follow through in person. Messages sometimes are lost in translation, and we know that. If you were joking, other person may not think you're serious. Sometimes I agonize when I send an email or a text because I just wanted to have the right tone, texture. It's hard to do that in email. So professional emails, sometimes it's just people could read it the wrong way. Tell even for yourselves or your kids or whoever, if they text somebody by accident, that's not the time to start engaging them in a conversation if you don't know the person. It's like calling, you got the wrong number, sorry, I got the wrong number, hang up. You're not going to call them and say, hey, I know I had the wrong number, but what's your name? Can I have a conversation with you? Same thing goes for texting. Don't text them back. Sexting is another, it's a huge issue. Sexting is the act of sending sexually explicit messages or photos electronically, primarily between cell phones, and it's happening with a lot of the kids. They're taking photos of themselves, uploading the photos. There's iChat, you know, somebody else with an iPhone can start chatting and sending images of themselves. This is why I talk about open transparency also in relationships, because sexting is an issue in some relationships because it's so private. And that's why I think that when I talk about having transparency in a marital relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, passwords and that, because I know that this has been an issue, you know, with relationships, people, and there have been some marriage breakups within the police service because of this. Immediately report any rude pictures that they receive on the cell phone and tell them just report it to an adult. And if I believe that if you for what I do, when I get emails sent to me, and if there's a photo of somebody, it's an actual photo, it's not a clip art, it's not a cartoon, I don't forward the photos. Because especially if it's not a nice photo and it's teasing somebody, I don't forward it. Because I think by me forwarding it, I'm victimizing that person over and over and over again. Because they're real photos of people. They're funny, but we got to think about, like, this is somebody's photo. This is somebody who's being passed around the internet and being made fun of. So I personally don't pass them on. And that's what I ask people to do, too. Just don't pass it on. Going to child pornography. It's a criminal code defines it as a photograph, film, or a video that shows a person who is depicted as being under the age of 18 years old or engaged in or depicted as engaged in explicit sexual activity. I had to go to a school in Winnipeg as a high school and speak to grade 9. I spoke to the entire assembly, grade 9 to 12, because they had some grade 9 girls after school that they would do. They thought it was funny. They'd go home and they would get on their webcam and take off their clothes, and there's some boys that would tune in because they knew that they're on site, and they would show them their breast, and they thought it was funny, but they didn't realize that they're committing a criminal offense. They're creating and distributing pornography. It is illegal, you know, because these girls are under, so even if they're involved in it themselves, they can be arrested. So I had to talk to the entire school and tell them that they were engaging in illegal activity, distributing pornography. A dominant characteristic of which is a depiction for sexual purpose or sexual organ of a person under the age of 18 years old is pornography, if it's they're showing sexual organs. I'm just going to quickly touch on this, because most of us have, the kids are all grown, but the kids, we talk about pornography, has just become such a huge problem, and it is also known as cyber crack. And we know how addictive crack cocaine is, one people could get addicted to by the first time they try it. Pornography, especially young men and women, the problem is there, but it's worse with our young men. They get introduced to pornography at a very young age. It's highly addictive. And so if a parent sees, even if it's on their phone, or if they find that their child has gone on a website, don't make the assumption that this is the first time that they've looked at this picture, because I'm almost certain it's not. This is the first time they've been caught. And pornography, they've said that if a young man starts looking at pornography before the age of 10, it's more than likely that they're going to become addicted to pornography. And it starts off with something very innocent, and then it gets into the debase. It's pretty bad. So that's something I think as parents that we really have to be on top of, and it's just being able to have open dialogue about it with their kids.
That's what creates all the predators out there, is the pornography. And if the pornography were to go away, you think we'd have tens of thousands of predators out there?
We'll always have predators, but I don't think the numbers would be as great. The internet has made it worse. It's intensified, absolutely. Like, you think of them, predators, they say that they sit there, they watch pornography all day, and they have fantasies, and they fantasize till it comes to the point of reality, and then they go out there. That's what happened to that little girl in Toronto. It's following her. It's just sickening.
Just for a statistic I heard on this, Christian university, they had done a survey 100% of the men in the Christian University were viewing pornography, and 87% of the women were as well.
100%?
100% of men.
The people that they interviewed?
Yeah, that they surveyed,
yeah?
Yeah.
That's actually pretty disturbing and pretty high.
That's very high. The actual incidence of sexaholism, which is addiction to...
Is what?
Sexaholism.
Yes, yeah.
In terms of dealing with lust in various forms.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an epidemic.
It's gotten worse with the internet, too.
The internet has made it go over the top.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really has. And the reality is pornography starts off as an individual issue, which reaches out to their families because they're neglecting their family.
Mm-hmm.
In this fantasy world. And then it does keep going downhill and becomes more base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's extremely serious.
It is. And that's another presentation that I have a whole lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's very serious. It's a very sensitive issue, but it's the reality. It's gone bad. I survey guys at work and men and women. So it's like, oh, isn't it normal?
Yeah.
Like, no, it's not normal. The world sees it as normal. It's okay. Yeah. And it's not okay. But that is the general belief. It's okay. And they think that I'm strange. It's just like.
That's the hard part is your
education.
You're going at it, it's a Christian institution. You know, that survey was done at it, it's that bad.
Yeah.
Now you've got kids that are going to public schools and it's depicted as being normal, regular, it's fully acceptable. And it doesn't matter. And then you're saying your friends are perceiving you as being weird because you say it's not. That's the impression, that's what we're getting when we're talking. We have a 17-year-old, 13-year-old, 17-year-old.
It's really about...
It's off the top compared to what, like we did, like it's all beyond what my wife and I are able to comprehend because it's there doesn't seem to be any boundary.
Right, where the...
And we're trying to help establish boundaries or help to recognize boundaries, but the boundary isn't there because tell them why, you show them why, you whatever, and it's just society doesn't, there's no boundary in society, supposedly.
It's a heart thing. It really is, it becomes onto a heart thing and a God thing because it's a fight, and I think, I truly believe that the kids, they have to hear about this from little, it's how they're raised. I truly believe that. Because I think that if I wasn't talking to my son about it at a very young age, because he was introduced to pornography at the age of, I think he was about 11, as I protected him from that stuff. There's stuff on TV that I wouldn't let him watch, but a friend at school, he was copying pornography on floppy disks and selling it to kids for a quarter. That's what they were doing at school. And so that's how my son, so you could try to protect them, but I think that it's just still having the conversation, you just continue talking and just really try to give them strong information that will maybe click in and make sense, but we can't stop talking about it, you know? So they might go, oh, whatever, but something that you say on that particular day and time, it might resonate with them, but we just have to continue talking about it because TV shows, this society makes it look like it's okay, but it's such a huge problem. It's a breakdown of marriages and relationships and just the way that, and I'm picking on boys here because it's predominantly, but there's an issue with women too, but the prevalence of the addiction is not as prevalent with women, but it's breaking down relationships and it's making it very difficult for young men to get into healthy relationships, a normal.
Well, in our perspective, it really terribly skews what they think a normal relationship
yes,
is.
Yes, that's exactly.
Mm-hmm. That can be perceived as.
Mm-hmm.
You may think that that's fine and enjoyable for whatever reason.
Right.
But if you want something that's going to last
yeah.
30 years as a marriage or something, you know, there's no guarantees.
I know.
But most of the people that have been married for 30 years, they've had to work at it and they recognize the boundaries. And
it's
respected those boundaries. Whereas,
it is an issue, it really is, and I just say just having conversation I think I've stopped having my son's 26 now, he doesn't need me to have conversations with him, but I just drilled it in as a brain, you know, and of course we have the God aspect, right? A lot of kids, they don't, you know, kids out there. And so knowing that it is wrong, it's sinful, like it just plays on their mind. But if they don't have that, it's difficult. It's a challenge. Just look at Fireproof. It's an issue. They made that movie, created the movie because it's an issue, right? And it's cyber crack. It's very addictive. Mm-hmm. You want?
I was just going to say, if you want to study it a bit more, because sometimes it helps with children to give them a little bit of science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who?
Patrick Carnes.
C-A-I-R-N-S. Right. Mm-hmm.
He has a number of studies on it.
Okay.
But there's actually a drug. They get a hit of serotonin.
Yes.
They get a hit off it every time they view it, and they get addicted to it. And so, I mean, like, Fireproof showed that he just made a decision one day and he stopped doing it forever and ever. And that does happen with God occasionally.
Mm-hmm. And that's how serious it can get. Morphing, we talk about photos. Once the photos are out there, people could do whatever they want with the photos. So they could take somebody's head, put it on somebody's body that's been completely nude, and try to tell the world that it's not you. It's just very damaging emotionally. So it just shows, and this also ties into the cyberbullying presentation that I have, but just morphing, just the sophisticated things that they can do with photos. The webcams, now we got the webcams, I got a webcam on there, we got webcams on our phones, we got webcams on our iPods, we got webcams on everything. So just be aware that there are programs out there that people could tap, could break into your webcam, they could just watch you the entire day. You know, my son, I laugh. Because I'm always taking the tape off the computer. I'm glad now he has his own iMac. He puts a tape over the webcam. He says, I do not want people watching me. Because it happens quite often. People don't know about it. They'll break into your webcam and they can watch you all day and you have no idea. Take photos of you. What's that?
That's only if you're connected to the
internet. No, they could turn it on. There are ways that they can do it. You have to be sophisticated. My brother-in-law who lives now in Santa Monica, if I have a problem, hey, can you help me? He takes over my computer. It's like when you're at work, IT does it. They can do that. They need your IP address and that. There's ways to do it. Mm-hmm.
We bought a camera,
mm-hmm.
but I've been kind of timid. For Skyping.
Oh, Skyping is great. That's what we use it for.
And that's
Yeah, if you just turn it off, you just disconnect it if you're not using it. But the most important thing is this. Never download any software sent to you because you've been told your webcam isn't working properly. Mm-hmm. Because you know what they're doing. They're getting into they're downloading that software and they're going to be able to watch your every move. And that's why they watch you, they see what's in your house. They could break into your house, they see exactly what's going on, you know, so. Hmm?
Mm. And I had a phone call from, I can't remember what company he said he was from, and he said that we had a virus on our computer.
Mm.
And he said, can you go to your computer, and he was going to tell me how to take rid of the virus. And I said, tell me what the virus is, and maybe you can phone me tomorrow night, and I will look if we have that virus on our computer. Like, I just wanted to stall it, so I'm like, I'm going to pull up our computer mm-hmm. doing what you tell me to do, because who knows what you're telling me to do, right?
And did they?
He never did phone back. So
that seems very odd to me.
Yeah, it's very odd. She's a Trojan or something, whatever.
No.
And I'm like,
I think that they're too busy to call
every Macintosh company, and that they looked at our computer and it's come up like 32 times that we have this virus.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either.
I think that they're too busy to call every Mac owner to say that there is a virus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same thing in ours.
Really?
Yep.
No.
And the second time when he called, here's his number. So he gave me a number. I said, what's your name? So he gave me a name. And then he said, well, when can I call you? I said, no, I'm going to call you.
Mm-hmm.
And he hung up. And so then I did. I went to the, I called Directory Assistance and asked for that number. I went to that cult number and I got a windows and doors.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And then I asked the guy, you know, did you have this guy waiting for you? No, he said, no, that's that.
See, they want to get into your computer. They yeah. get in your computer?
I'm sure, like, I didn't know what he was going to do. I was almost thinking, well, I should just tell him I'm on the computer and just write down what he's telling me.
They're going
to
get access to your computer, and they're going to get access to your personal information and steal your information. They're going to get access to your, if you do online banking,
yeah.
all that stuff. That's what they're looking for. The fellow that we arrested, I mean, he got into a government website and stole people's information. It's like when he's arrested, it's going to be huge because it's far reaching. It's not only in Canada. It's yeah. So my video is not working. They're great videos. I know. I'm going to have to reload it.
To the Mac tomorrow.
Okay. I have a Mac. I won't use it. He's going to teach me how to use it. It's just learning a new operating system. That's what. This is my old computer. And okay, we're at the end of it. It says, why do incidents go unreported? Kids are afraid or embarrassed to tell their parents, and we're afraid and embarrassed to tell our friends. You know, something like, especially this whole cyber dating thing, it is embarrassing. You know, if you give out information or you have inappropriate conversations or somebody wants something from you, it's just embarrassing sometimes. Kids don't know if it's a crime or if it's a reportable incident, and people don't know where to report it. But they do have the cyber tip, and those are the phone numbers. And there's the kids help phone line, because sometimes the kids, they don't want to talk to their parents, but they'll talk to somebody on that phone line. So it's really important to have these numbers and the cyber tip line. But it's not only the internet, it's not only do we have to be aware for our kids, and we have to educate our children, educate our grandchildren, our nephews and nieces, but we have to be educated, because a lot of people's lives are being destroyed from inappropriate use of the internet and not being safe, you know, while we're on it. Thank you. Thanks, my audience. Tomorrow I'll be presenting on gangs, drugs. It's a real interesting presentation. You know, I know that it's something that we may feel that, oh, you know, we are in a Christian community, you know, we don't believe in doing drugs. However, we've got young people out there, we've got friends, because we don't live in a bubble. So we have individuals, or we may know people that may be having problems with addiction. We may have family members, or even our own children, nephews and nieces that are struggling with addictions. So I think information and knowledge is key to its power. And so just it's good to learn, because there's some scary stuff out there called like dusting. You'll find out about dusting tomorrow. I'm going to talk a little bit about the bath salts. I didn't load any pictures of the results of using bath salts on this because it's too graphic. It's quite horrible, but it's out there. Mm-hmm. And dusting is something that our kids can do. Just find something at home, and one use can kill you. And there are kids doing it because it's just a cheap high. So that's tomorrow's lineup. Make sure you're there. Come. All right, thank you. I know, isn't that great? Sun's shining, there'll be more people tomorrow. There's a little bit more this morning, it was good. My videos were working. Let's see what happened with the video. We'll get it fixed up.
Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, yes, that's right.
Do you have any questions? Anything about policing?